taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read, we study the Constitution, we teach a rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me because I have a couple of very important topics I want to talk about today. I have some very serious concerns about the future of the Republic. I've seen some things coming out that, well, part of me knows that news is generated by generally a relatively small percentage of the population. It gives them an outsized appearance of influence. But I've seen some things recently that they seriously disturb me. They make me question the Benjamin Franklin quote when he said they gave us a republic if we can keep it. This makes me wonder, can we actually keep our republic? Now, I have something that really pushed this along, but I want to start with a recent article I wrote around the vaccine mandate cases at the Supreme Court. Specifically, I'm starting with the oral arguments. I know they've already dealt with the stays, but I want to start with the oral arguments because I'm setting a stage here, and I will deal with the actual opinions regarding these injunctions at a later date. But I wanted to start here because this, to me, is a symptom of the problem we have in the Republic. By the time this posts, the Supreme Court will probably have offered their opinion on the injunctions against OSHA's mandate against private businesses and HHS's against healthcare providers. Before the court could render its opinion, though, there were oral arguments. Now, many court watchers seem to believe the court would offer restrictions, if not find the mandates illegal. Reading the transcripts of the oral argument showed a much more serious failure in our legal system, the judicial branch, and the potential failure of our constitutional republic. Oral arguments in two combined cases were heard at the Supreme Court on Friday, January 7th, 2022. The National Federation of Independent Business, or the NFIB, versus Department of Labor, Occupation Safety Health Administration, OSHA, was combined with Ohio versus OSHA and heard together. Similarly, Biden versus Missouri and Becerra versus Louisiana were heard together as well. Both cases involve the question of vaccine mandates. The main difference between them is the target of the mandates and the government entity that issued them. While many of the arguments offered were similar, did Congress grant to the agency in question the authority to issue mandates? They also missed what is to me the most basic question. Does the Constitution delegate to the United States the power to mandate the use of an experimental pharmaceutical as a condition of employment? First up is the case of NFIB versus OSHA. In this case, NFIB is suing OSHA and requesting a stay, preventing OSHA from implementing its Emergency Temporary Standard, or ETS, requiring all businesses with 100 or more employees implement a vaccination or testing mandate for their employees. Mr. Scott Keller, arguing on behalf of the NFIB, started with, OSHA's economy-wide, one-size-fits-all mandate covering 84 million Americans is not a necessary, indispensable use of OSHA's extraordinary emergency powers, which this court has recognized is narrowly circumscribed. In the parallel case, Ohio versus OSHA, Benjamin Flowers argued on behalf of the state of Ohio. OSHA typically identifies a workplace danger and then regulates it. But here, the president decided to regulate a danger and then told OSHA to find a work-related basis for doing so. This resulted in the vaccine mandate, a blunderbuss rule nationwide in scope that requires the same thing of all covered employers, regardless of the steps they've taken to protect employees, regardless of the nature of their workplaces, regardless of their employees' risk factors, and regardless of local conditions that state and local officials are far better positioned to understand and accommodate.
Both of the appellants, the NFIB and the state of Ohio, claim that OSHA has exceeded their regulatory power with this mandate. Meanwhile, Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar argued on behalf of OSHA. OSHA amassed substantial evidence of widespread workplace outbreaks across all industries. It studied the science of how this virus is transmitted and found that workers are exposed to dangers when they are inside together for as little as 15 minutes. And OSHA considered the extensive evidence that vaccinated employees are at heightened risk of contracting the virus, of transmitting it to others and infecting their coworkers, and of suffering the gravest consequences, hospitalization, and even death. To protect against that grave danger, the standard requires employers to adopt a policy that unvaccinated employees either get vaccinated or mask and test. Those are commonplace and highly effective measures that OSHA determined were essential to stopping the spread of this dangerous disease at work. Now, there was plenty of argument and debate around questions of procedures, legal standards, etc. Both sides presented facts and figures to support their positions, including data, exaggerations, and outright lies. I think Justice Kagan pointed out the central question in both arguments, though, and the fatal flaw currently running rampant in our governments. Mr. Keller, your very last comment in the first part of your argument I want to come back to, because your very last sentence you said the question is who decides. And I think that's right. I think that is the question. Who decides? Shouldn't that be the fundamental question in any free country? Do the people decide or does the government? Sadly, but not unexpectedly, Justice Kagan not only started on the wrong side of the Constitution, but showed the fatal flaw in the appellant's arguments. So who decides? Should it be the agency full of expert policymakers and completely politically accountable through the president? This is not the kind of policy in which there's no political accountability. If people like this policy, they'll go to the polls and vote it that way. If people don't like it, they'll vote that way. This is a politically accountable policy. It also has a virtue of expertise. So on the one hand, the agency with their political leadership can decide. Or on the other hand, courts can decide. Courts are not politically accountable. Courts have not been elected. Courts have no epidemiological expertise. Why in the world would courts decide this opinion? Neither Mr. Keller nor Mr. Flowers made a constitutional argument. In fact, while the justices claimed they had accepted the constitutionality of OSHA and a passing mention of the Constitution's separation of powers, the document itself was never quoted. At one point, Justice Sotomayor stated, "I understood the fact that in an emergency we should not violate the Constitution, but I'm not quite sure what regulation of safe and healthy, what provision of the Constitution it violates." It breaks my heart to see someone who is supposed to be one of the best legal minds in our country who cannot understand the plain language of the very document she took an oath to support. Sadly, Justice Sotomayor was not alone in her lack of understanding of the Constitution. From Justice Gorsuch, "Mr. Flowers, I'd like to return to the question of who decides. And I think we've all kind of come to the point where we all agree that states have a wide police power under our constitutional system that Congress has to regulate consistent with the Commerce Clause and make the major decisions while agencies can do the work that Congress has given them to do, but not other kinds of work. And the major questions doctrine kind of regulates that interaction between Congress and the agencies. So let me answer the question of who decides, not by navel gazing within the federal government, but by going to the actual document these justices took an oath to support. Let's start with the most basic concept of separation of powers, not between the branches of the federal government, but between the United States and the several states. The 10th Amendment clearly states, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people." The very first question that should have been asked is not what did Congress authorize, but whether Congress had the authority to authorize it in the first place. If the Constitution does not delegate to the United States the power to mandate medical decisions or employment, then no act of Congress doing so is valid. This was clearly explained by both Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Papers No. 78 and previous Supreme Court opinions. From Federalist 78, there is no position which depends on clearer principles than that every act of a delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised is void. No legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. To deny this would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than his principal, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves, that men acting by virtue of powers may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid. This idea that any act of Congress contrary to the Constitution is void is not unique to Mr. Hamilton. As I've already mentioned, the Supreme Court in the case Marbury versus Madison acknowledged it as well. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principle, supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts, as well as other departments, are bound by that instrument. Now, Justice Gorsuch said that Congress has the power to regulate a state's police power with the Commerce Clause, but the Commerce Clause says no such thing. It delegates to Congress the power to regulate commerce with the foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. This mandate isn't regulating interstate commerce. It's not regulating commerce at all. I have a hard time even considering this mandate as a regulation of employment, which Congress is not authorized to do in the first place. This mandate does not set standards of what employers must provide for their employees. Rather, this is an attempt to get private employers to enforce mandates the federal government is prohibited from enforcing on its own. In short, both OSHA and Medicaid and Medicare mandates are attempts by the federal government to circumvent the Constitution. Furthermore, both Justices Thomas and Kagan brought up the Necessary and Proper Clause. Justice Thomas, when in McCullough versus Maryland, Chief Justice Marshall, in looking at Necessary and Proper, saw necessary as more expansive than that as certainly modified by proper, or in the context of proper. So it just suggests that necessary can be really necessary or not necessarily really necessary. And Justice Kagan said, "I guess, Mr. Keller, I don't understand the point. Whatever necessary means, whether it is necessary and proper, or whether it's something more than that, why isn't this necessary to abate a grave risk? This is a pandemic in which nearly a million people have died. It is by far the greatest public health danger that this country has faced in the last century. More and more people are dying every day. More and more people are getting sick every day. I don't mean to be dramatic here, I'm just sort of stating facts. And this is the policy that is most geared to stopping all this. There's nothing else that will perform that function better than incentivizing people strongly to vaccinate themselves. So, you know, whatever necessary means, whatever grave means, why isn't this necessary and grave?" Well, Justice Kagan does go on to explain just why she believes the mandate is necessary. Both her and Justice Thomas seem to miss the point of the Necessary and Proper Clause, which delegates to Congress the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department thereof. Congress has the power to make laws necessary and proper for executing the powers vested in the government of the United States. Since the power to regulate employees' medical decision is not one of those powers, all of Justice Kagan's emotional and hyperbolic rhetoric should mean absolutely nothing. And all sides miss the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment, which reads, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." These mandates not only deprive the employers of the liberty to run their businesses as they see fit and the property they have in their businesses, it deprives the employees of the liberty of deciding for themselves whether they wish to be vaccinated or not, or to work with unvaccinated people or not. See, rather than following due process, a governmental or judicial process designed to protect individual rights, these regulations ignore our rights and treat the American people as if they were identical cogs in a machine. Now let's look at Biden versus Missouri and Becerra versus Louisiana. In these cases, the Biden administration is trying to get the Supreme Court to overturn a preliminary injunction, a stay put in place by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Mr. Brian Fletcher, the principal deputy solicitor general for the United States, arguing for the president, argued that the mandate was the best way to prevent patients getting infected. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Hospitals, nursing homes, and other and Medicaid providers serve patients who are especially vulnerable to COVID-19 in settings that are especially conducive to the spread of this virus. The secretary required those providers to make sure that their staff are vaccinated, subject to medical and religious exemptions, because he found that vaccination is the best way to prevent workers from infecting their patients with a potentially dangerous disease. He also found that any delay in implementing that requirement would cause preventable deaths and severe illness. Mr. Jesus Asote, Deputy Attorney General for the state of Missouri, not only pointed out the decision this mandate requires healthcare workers to make, but the lack of statutory authority Secretary Becerra had to promulgate such regulation. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. In early 2020, while millions stayed at home, millions of healthcare workers heroically stayed at work. These same workers are now forced to choose between losing their jobs and complying with the government's vaccine mandate. The secretary's claim of authority to impose this mandate is expansive, unprecedented, and unlawful for two principal reasons. First, the secretary believes a series of vague catch-all provisions scattered throughout the Social Security Act authorize this sweeping mandate, but the relevant text, structure, and context say otherwise. Second, the rule is arbitrary and capricious under the APA. Elizabeth Neurel, Solicitor General for Louisiana, brought the question to a finer point. Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. This case is not about whether vaccines are effective, useful, or a good idea. It's about whether this federal executive branch agency has the power to force millions of people working for or with a Medicaid or Medicare provider to undergo an invasive, irrevocable, forced medical treatment, a COVID shot. It is a bureaucratic power move that is unprecedented. Different cases, but the same basic question. Who decides? It is unfortunate each had the same basic disregard for the Constitution so many involved swore or affirmed to support. Ms. Murrell did not argue whether the federal government had the power to force people to do their will, but only if Congress had authorized it by legislation. So who decides? This is the most basic question of liberty. Do you decide for yourself, or does someone else decide for you? Are we free to make our own decisions or not? Can someone in government decide they know better than you do how you should live your life, under what conditions you will work, and what medical treatments you will subject yourself to? Are we a free people or subject to the government's whims? Do we live at liberty? Noah Webster defined liberty in his 1828 dictionary as freedom from restraint in a general sense and applicable to the body or to the will or mind. Are the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. tyrants over us? Again, from Noah Webster's definition of liberty. A restraint of natural liberty, not necessary or expedient for the public, is tyranny or oppression. The answer comes from the question posed by Justice Kagan of who decides. If we the people decide when a restraint is necessary or expedient, then we live at liberty. If those in government make those decisions, we live in tyranny and oppression. I've only uncovered the beginning of the constitutional dumpster fire that these cases represent. I have pages of notes and not nearly enough time to cover it all here, though I do have another question I want you to consider. What happens when a country ignores its supreme law? What is life like when bureaucrats, congressmen, lawyers, and judges alike all ignore their oaths to support the Constitution and their duty to protect our rights? What do we do when a government formed to protect our rights, which gets its power from our consent, instead ignores our consent and destroys our rights? Maybe we can learn from the Declaration of Independence that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness.
Do you see my concern? Do you see why I wonder if we are losing the Republic? The very idea that the people we have in charge, the best legal minds in our country, can't understand the basic English of the Constitution they swore to support. The very idea that the Constitution does not control what Congress can do, that Congress can do whatever it wants, that it can give powers, never delegate to the United States, it can give them to executive agencies, is a tyrannical act. But when the courts, the supposed arbiters of the Constitution, ignore their oath of office, ignore the Constitution, don't even ask the question, then our republic is on the brink of collapse. Because if the Constitution doesn't matter anymore, if the executive branch ignores it, if the legislative branch ignores it, if the judicial branch ignores it, then we're not a republic. Because we don't choose our electors anymore. They're chosen for us. It's whoever's appointed to the Supreme Court, they get to decide who decides. They get to decide whether or not you get to decide your own medical decisions, your own employment decisions. If the federal government can make taking an experimental drug a condition for employment, then the republic truly is doomed. And as bad as the actions, as the lawyers in these cases, the justices in these cases so far, it doesn't compare with the actions of the American people, because we are sitting here and watching it happen. See, Mr. Franklin didn't say we could have a republic as long as our government kept it. He said we'd have a republic as long as the people could keep it. And we are sitting by and watching while our republic is being trashed. It is being dismantled. It is being destroyed. It's being crushed. Your rights are being destroyed. And most of the American people are doing nothing. They don't even realize the extent to which the tyranny in Washington is taking place. They don't even realize the rights that they are losing day by day. I've told the story before of a Zoom call I had with some college students a few months ago. And one student said, listen, you're talking about, you know, our rights and our Constitution, but, you know, COVID, this is serious. This is, if it's for the best, what does it matter? I mean, after all, society hasn't collapsed. And I took quite a while listing off the rights that I enjoyed when I was his age that he no longer has. You no longer have freedom of religion. The government and your employer will decide whether or not your religion is really real enough to warrant being considered a religion. You don't have freedom of speech. You say the wrong thing, and you'll get shot. You'll get banned. They'll cancel you. They'll go back into your past to find something you said and use as an excuse to get you fired, to get your business shut down, to deny you licenses. Freedom of the press? Huh? I got booted off of Facebook for actually teaching what the Constitution says about the presidential election process. Now, I can still print, but my reach is a lot smaller now. And don't forget, Jen Psaki, President Biden's press secretary, says they are identifying people who say things they don't like, what they refer to as misinformation, and they are handing that over to Facebook for censorship. You want to peaceably assemble? You know what? If you're Antifa or BLM, you can riot and loot. You can take over public land. You can destroy private property, and you won't be prosecuted. But if you gathered on January 6th to protest the illegal appointment of presidential electors, you are considered an insurrectionist whether you've invaded the Capitol or not. And just try petitioning your government for a redress of grievance, assuming you can come up with the money to actually file a court case and follow it through the entire process. You get it before this group of nine oligarchs who don't even know what the Constitution says. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just the First Amendment. Those rights are gone because we sat back while they were eroded and we did nothing. And we're sitting back and watching while even more rights are being destroyed. And we're doing nothing. And I'm afraid our children and our grandchildren will one day curse us for our unwillingness to stand in defense of the rights that we enjoyed that they will not be able to. Or they'll be so indoctrinated that the idea of freedom of speech, freedom of the press, peaceable assembly will be as foreign to them as the housing of the military and private homes is to us. Now, I have to head for a break, but before I do, please head to constitutionstudy.com/study. Sign up for my online study. I will be covering the Bill of Rights. You can join absolutely free, and we will study. Not just me speaking. We will study. It'll be online. It'll be on Zoom. People will be able to participate, be engaged, and you can join. Again, constitutionstudy.com/study. You can just go to constitutionstudy.com and support any of the work that we're doing. Sign up for the newsletter, ask a question, be involved, be engaged. It's not that hard to know more about the Constitution than the nine justices on the Supreme Court apparently do. An 18th century American can understand the Constitution. It's time the 21st century Americans do as well. Doesn't take a law degree, doesn't take a college course. We can do it. I've proof positive I've done it before. So please sign up at constitutionstudy.com/study. Also, please head to healthycell.com. You know, if you have a hard time swallowing vitamins, try Healthy Cell's pill-free supplements. They have different formulas for different needs. I'm currently working on the focus and recall so that, you know, at the end of the day, you get that kind of, you know, fuzzy-headed, not too motivated. A lot of people reach for the energy drinks or the energy shots. Well, you're full of sugar and caffeine. How about you jump for some vitamins? I'm enjoying it. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. So go to healthycell.com, pick out whatever you want. When you check out, use Out Loud during checkout to get 20% off your first order.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, and I hope the first half of this program scared you. I hope you were listening to just how close we are to losing the Republic, and it got your attention. Now, if that didn't scare you, let me give you some information. This comes from a Rasmussen report. If this doesn't scare you, I don't know what will. Because this isn't looking at government. This is looking at society as a whole. Now, this poll was done by Rasmussen Reports and Healthland Institute. They surveyed 1,000 U.S. likely voters. And here's some of the highlights. 58% of voters would oppose a proposal for federal or state governments to fine Americans who choose not to get a COVID-19 vaccine. However, 55% of Democrat voters would support such a proposal, compared to just 19% of Republicans and 25% of unaffiliated. 59% of Democrat voters would favor a government policy requiring that citizens remain confined to their homes at all times, except for emergencies, if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, such a proposal was opposed by 61% of all likely voters, including 79% of Republicans and 71% of unaffiliated voters. Nearly half, 48% of Democratic voters, think federal and state governments should be able to fine or imprison individuals who publicly question the efficacy of the existing COVID-19 vaccines on social media, television, radio, or in online or digital productions. Only 27% of all voters, including just 14% of Republicans and 80% of unaffiliated voters, favor criminal punishment of vaccine critics. 45% of Democrats would favor governments requiring citizens to temporarily live in designated facilities or locations if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. Such a policy would be opposed by a strong majority, 71% of all voters, with 78% of Republicans and 64% of unaffiliated voters saying they would strongly oppose putting the unvaccinated in designated facilities. By the way, the common term for that is internment camps. Let's see. While two-thirds, 66% of likely voters would be against governments using digital devices to track unvaccinated people to ensure they are quarantined or socially distanced from others, 47% of Democrats favor a government tracking program for those who won't get the COVID-19 vaccine. Are you sensing a pattern here? Now, at the Constitution, we are not partisan. I fully believe a pox on both their houses. But we're not simply talking government actors. We are talking the voting public. And there are groups of people that want unvaccinated interred, fined. They want you to shut up if you criticize. Think about this for a second. Think about some of these numbers. Not just the numbers, what the questions were. If you don't take an experimental drug, there are people out there who want you fined. If you don't take an experimental drug, they want you quarantined or interned in a camp. And if you dare to question the effectiveness of these fake vaccines, they want you fined or imprisoned. This is not simply, well, Paul, those laws would never go into effect. You know what? Not now. I doubt today anyone will put those laws. But look at the number of people that are willing to fine you, imprison you, shut you up if you don't comply with a political point of view. Because if they can do it for COVID-19, if these people can do it, what do you think they would say about, questioning the whether or not there was fraud in the 2020 election, or the 2022 election, or the 2024 election? This is not liberty and justice for all. And these people vote. Think about that for a minute. How can a free republic survive when a group of people have majorities that don't believe the others should be, that anybody who disagrees with them should be allowed to go about their lives, should be quarantined, interned, imprisoned for disagreeing with them. How do you have freedom of speech? How do you have freedom of the press is if you challenge orthodoxy and you're imprisoned or fined? And for all those who say, we have to trust the science, you cannot have science unless people challenge existing assumptions. Science is based on challenging what you've been told. Freedom and liberty exist only when you allow other people to disagree with you. But there are a group of people, and that group appears to be growing, that don't believe you have a right to your own body. They say you have a right to your own body if you want to kill a baby, but you don't have the right to determine what goes into your body. That you don't have the right to look at the data and say, maybe this isn't as good as we were told. This is the destruction of the Republic. Not the idiots in Washington, not the oligarchs in the Supreme Court. This. People who believe that freedom means they get their way and everybody else shuts up. This is what Mr. Franklin warned us about. You cannot have a republic if a growing number of people agree with this. Now, unlike them, I'm not saying they should be fined. I'm not saying they should be imprisoned. I'm not saying they should be interred. I'm not saying they should be silenced. What I am saying is we need to see this, and we need to be prepared to have an answer for this. If 58% of Democratic voters believe you should be fined for not taking a vaccine, ask them if they'd be willing to be fined for not using heroin. Paul, that's different. How is it different? The only difference is the government said one and okay, the government says the other isn't. Okay, vaccine's supposed to be good for you. Heroin, yeah, it's a painkiller, but maybe not so good for you. All right, what if they say you have to eat broccoli or cauliflower or kale? How is that any different? Can you imagine being fined for not eating kale? See, what happens when you find something that they don't want to take and you say, well, no, you can you imagine going to a Jew or a Muslim and saying, you must eat pork? Can you imagine going to a vegan and saying, you have to eat a hamburger? Controlling what goes into your body. Can you imagine being quarantined or put in an internment camp because you refused to be a guinea pig in a medical experiment? I know they say, but we need to do this to keep everyone safe. That is a lie. The data is out there. Even the CDC admits these quote-unquote vaccines do not prevent you from getting COVID. They don't prevent you from spreading COVID. At best, they mitigate the symptoms of COVID, meaning COVID, these quote-unquote vaccines are not about public health. They're about private health, but they want to mandate that you get them. They want to force you to get them as a condition of living in this country. You need it to get a job. You need it to be in certain industries. How long before they say you need it to go to school? Because if they can tell you that, we are not a free republic anymore. We are the Soviet Union of America at that point. And we are fast approaching that. And this survey says we actually have the cultural revolution of America is taking place right now in this country. And most Americans are going, oh, but it's just a bunch of fit. No, it's not. If the numbers I've seen are right, you know, a something like 40% of the people are Democrats and 40% are Republicans, a significant portion of that 40% don't believe you have rights. Ladies and gentlemen, the Republic is disappearing right before our eyes. What are you doing about it? I was asked that question earlier today. I was at a meeting and I said, well, the first thing we have to do is we have to make sure that we are safe locally. Because if you cannot be defended locally, fixing Washington doesn't fix the problem. Because of these 1,000 people, not all of them live in Washington. They live all across the country. If we aren't prepared to defend ourselves against these attacks on our rights, to engage peaceably with people who want to destroy us, if we don't provide the answers about why what they're talking about is so evil, it'll come. Maybe it won't come in your lifetime. Maybe your children will have to suffer it. Maybe their children will have to suffer it. Because I saw this article, Dr. Earl Stoddard. He is the director of the Montgomery County Office of Emergency Management and Homeland Security in Montgomery County, Maryland. And he was at a council meeting, and he was talking about a proposal to implement a vaccine passport in the county. That's right. You want to go around the county, you have to show your papers. You have to show that you were a good little subject, that you took your experimental drug. He said that it would be the least harmful outcome for businesses because it would be less draconian than mitigation measures. Really? I mean, those illegal measures that shut down businesses, in criminal acts of shutting down businesses? But guess what? He said, and I'm quoting from him, that's why we chose to include 5 to 11-year-olds because that is an area where we need to see an increased uptake of the vaccine. That was a choice that we made to try and encourage vaccination in that population specifically. They want to require restaurants, bars, fitness areas, other covered establishment to require a vaccine to help push the vaccine in 5 to 11-year-olds who rarely get sick. They're a very small population portion of those who are infected with, who are sick from COVID, very small number of hospitalizations, and statistically zero chance of dying from it. They don't care. This vaccine hysteria is not a public health issue. It is a control issue. It is not public health. If it doesn't stop you from, first of all, if it stopped you from getting the COVID-19, what do you care whether someone else is vaccinated or not? If the vaccine kept you from getting COVID, you wouldn't worry. You could walk through a sea of COVID-infected people coughing and sneezing on you all day long, and you wouldn't get COVID. You wouldn't care. But they say it keeps you from spreading, except science says otherwise. You get COVID, you shed just as much virus, you just don't happen to get as sick from it. Which means it's not public health, it's private health. And if the government can control you, if they can force you to be as healthy as they want, if they can force you to take an experimental drug, if they can force you to get your children to take an experimental drug, how are we a free country anymore? How can you consider us anything other than Venezuela, North Korea? How is this really that different from the Taliban? You say, Paul, you're being hyperbolic. No, I'm not. A government that can say a condition of being a free citizen is you must submit to a medical experiment is a Nazi government. That is the same logic as they used when they picked people for Mengele's experiment. If you want to be a good citizen, you must submit. And they can put all the smiles they want on it. They can put all the bribes they want on it. This is America in 2022. What, ladies and gentlemen, what are you going to do about it? Then we have President Biden, who plans to micromanage your law enforcement. That's right. He plans to roll out by executive edict. These are not laws, ladies and gentlemen. This is King Biden issuing edicts. He wants to, quote unquote, reform police in honor of Black History Month. He doesn't want to pass laws. He doesn't want to follow the Constitution. He wants to rule on high from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and he is going to just simply write an order and say, you must comply. Ladies and gentlemen, ask yourself, how many of your city officials are going to stand up to this tyrant and say, oh, no, we don't. We won't accept your bribes. You show up with FBI trying to enforce this stuff, we will arrest them. Because there are more of us than there are of them. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a tyrant. I'm not being hyperbolic. If the President of the United States can simply write on a piece of paper, we're going to rewrite how a law enforcement works in this country. There's no constitutional authorization. There's no legislative authorization. He's just going to write it because that's what he thinks is best for you. We no longer live in a free republic. We don't live in a republic at all. We live in a totalitarian dictatorship with all these oligarchs, all kissing the boots of King Biden the First. This is what Franklin warned us about. We've already seen, he issued a mandate. Says, hey, you know what? We want everybody vaccinated. OSHA come up with a rule. HHS come up with a rule. He actually announced this from in a press conference, and before he even wrote an executive order, I don't even know if he actually wrote an executive order. He simply said he was going to write an executive order, and how many businesses jumped on the vaccine mandate bandwagon? That is not a republic. That is a dictatorship. And that is the state of America in 2021. What are you going to do about it? And then this other little tyrant, Nancy Pelosi, speaking on Martin Luther King Day, she says, we cannot confine our democracy to what might be bipartisanly possible. Now, just think about that for a second. I mean, forget the fact that America is not a democracy. We're a republic. But the whole idea of a democracy is everybody votes, majority wins. Everybody votes. Majority wins. Except this tin pot little dictator isn't interested in that. She says, even though she can't get a majority in both houses, she doesn't care. We can't allow the fact that people oppose us prevent us from doing what we want. This isn't democracy, what she's talking about. What she said, what she should have said is, we cannot confine our Democratic Party to what might be bipartisanly possible. She wishes to rule from the Speaker's House. She wants to rule from the Speaker's office, and the fact that she can't get a majority of people on the other side to agree to it, then that's too bad. We got to change the rules, because if we can't get it done the way we've always done it, you got to change the rules to get what you want. This is a tin pot dictator. This is exactly what you see. This is what you see in Putin's Russia. It's what you see in China. It's what we see. It's what we see in Venezuela. It's what we see in every country, every banana republic, every tin pot dictatorship we've ever seen. If I can't get what I want following the rules, then we change the rules. And where by and is everyone saying, but what the Constitution says? Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask you. Nancy Pelosi represents San Francisco. San Francisco, this cesspool of a city. It's become an absolute cesspool. I heard somewhere that they sold a decrepit house. I mean, literally falling apart, foundations falling apart, rat infestation, for $2 million. $2 million for a city, what was once a beautiful city, a city with an app to find where the poo and the needles are. So I'm not surprised she acts like a Timbuktu dictator. That's how San Francisco runs itself. Ladies and gentlemen, are we going to let a little tin pot dictator from San Francisco turn the entire American nation into a tin pot, a third world country, into a banana republic because she wants to get her way? If the people in San Francisco want to be ruled by a tin pot dictator, then let them. But ladies and gentlemen, when she steps on the floor and says, we can't be allowed to let our agenda be subverted by the fact we can't get enough people to agree to it, that lady needs to be removed from office. She should be removed as Speaker. She should be removed from the House. This is an ethical violation. She swore an oath to support the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States says the House, the people elect the members of the House, and they set the rules. Boom. You can't live by the rules, then you shouldn't be in that office. And the rest of the nation doesn't have to live with a corrupt tin pot dictator simply because the idiots in San Francisco like it that way. We have an election coming up in 2022. Every member of the House is up for election except for those who are running scared and retiring. That is it's a job review. I want you to think of 2022, November 2022, is a job review. It's a job review for every member of the House of Representatives. It's a job review for one-third of the Senate. It's a job review for every state and local officer up for election. And I want you to look at their record and say, have they done a good job? Have they followed their oath to support the Constitution? Have they increased liberty or destroyed liberty in America? Have they secured your rights or have they destroyed your rights? Now, I haven't watched the records of all of them, but the vast majority of the people I've seen, they have destroyed. There is maybe one or two members of the House that I would consider voting for. Every other one of them I've seen has worked to destroy the republic, not secure it. To destroy the rights of the American people, not preserve them. If we don't see them as our employees, if we don't look at 22 as a job review and start throwing the bums out, America as a free country is history. And when your children and your children's children look back, they're going to curse us. I've already had to apologize to my daughter for the mess of a nation we're leaving her. This is not a partisan divide, Republican and Democrat alike. I know very few that I would think come close to being worthy of sitting in that office. James Garfield said, now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If it be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. We have been tolerating ignorance, recklessness, and corruption for decades. How do I know that? Answer this question. How can you tell when a politician is lying? If your answer is something other than the variation of their lips are moving, that's a new one. They're liars. They're thieves. They're criminals. They're crooks. And we keep hiring them. None of them are owed that position. They have to come to you and earn it. Now, we've taught them that all they got to do is bribe us with some goodies and we'll let them keep their jobs. We have to stop that. It's time the American people woke up and realized Congress is their fault. Or as Abraham Lincoln put it, the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overturn the Constitution, but to overturn the men who pervert the Constitution. Well, there you go. President Biden's perverting the Constitution. Nancy Pelosi's perverting the Constitution. This guy in Maryland is perverting the Constitution. The 9 justices in the Supreme Court are perverting the Constitution. What are we going to do about it? And if your answer is, well, I'm just going to sit back and, you know, hunker down in the woods and, you know, you're part of the problem. Because you saw the problem and refused to do anything about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I've given you a glimpse of America in 2022, and I've given you a glimpse at its most likely future. You can either help fix the problem, or you can be part of the problem, because the reason we are here is as much because of apathy as it is because of ignorance and arrogance. If you sit back and let this happen, you deserve to be cursed by the next generation. Because the plan that millions of people went to for freedom and liberty is falling. And if America falls, if freedom and liberty and rights and America falls, where will the rest of the world go? There is no other place, ladies and gentlemen. Europe isn't any better. Canada isn't any better. There isn't any place else to go. We are the last bastion of hope. And we are falling down on the job. And to be honest, we don't deserve this republic. At this point, it's not a question of can we keep it. At this point, we don't deserve it. Now be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for the latest news and happenings. You know, it's important that we keep up and share this information, the videos, the articles, the podcasts, so that we can help others see the blessings of liberty. We can share the blessings of liberty, and together we can still secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.